Welcome to the Sound of Economics. My name is Guntram Wolf and I'm the director of Bruegel, and I'm today joined by Luis Garicano, the vice president of Renew Europe, in charge in the European Parliament for everything that's economics and monetary and digital. Welcome, Luis.
Yeah, I'm very, very happy to be here. Thanks very much.
And I'm also joined by Maria de Merzes, Bruegel's deputy director. And today we want to talk about two issues, really. One issue is Europe's banking union, and Luis Garicano is presenting today at Bruegel a paper at Bruegel. And then we want to spend a bit of time on the Green Deal and its pitfalls. Luis, why don't you kick us off by saying a few words in non-technical terms on banking union and how we can complete this thing? We've been talking about it for so many years and we are still not there. What's your idea?
We're not there, and in fact, I fear that we're going backwards in terms of how much cross-border banking and how much of a real banking union we have. The single market for banking is really going backwards. And I think that a big part of the problem has to do with how we haven't really done the homework that we promised to do in the banking crisis. When the banking crisis took place, we saw there was, policymakers realized there was a doom loop, it was called at the time, between sovereigns and banks, basically contagion, like the virus. When the banks get sick, the sovereign gets sick, and when the sovereign gets sick, the banks get sick, and so we get into these vicious circles. And in order to do that, we said, okay, to cut this doom loop, we're going to do three things. We're going to get a single supervision, single resolution, and single deposit insurance. Those were in the usual Euro parlance, the three pillars. The truth of the matter is, as you were hinting in your question, we really haven't advanced much. We set up the first pillar, which is really massive achievement for Europe to have a single supervision. It's enormous, enormous achievement. Then we set up a resolution mechanism. We have a whole regulator who's able to resolve banks, and it has a whole bureaucracy, and it's very professional. But this resolution authority hasn't really intervened. And the promise was that we wouldn't never use taxpayer money again to save the banks, because that's what creates the doom loop. If you just write a check every time there's a bank in trouble because you're scared of panics, then the states are behind the banks, and when the banks fail, the states fail. Mm. In fact, this resolution authority has proven surprisingly shy, shall we say. I don't know what's your view on that. But it's been shy to act. Let's put it this way.
It acted actually only in one case, which is a Spanish case.
Spanish case, Popular, which was a medium to large Spanish bank that was successfully resolved, although it has to be said, the view outside of Spain is more positive than in Spain, because everybody in Spain saw the sausage fully cooked. Yes, the bank was resolved, but we saw how the sausage was being cooked, and the truth of the matter is it was almost not done. I mean, at 7:30 in the morning of a weekday, things were still unclear, and if the bank had to open, it wouldn't have been possible.
So we were just lucky that Santander was there.
We were lucky that in the last minute Santander stepped in. And then there's a third pillar, which is deposit insurance, which in the last 5 years, nothing has happened. So this dossier is stuck. We don't have a single market for banks. The states still are afraid they will have to be the ones picking up the pieces when banks get in trouble. And the result is they force the banks to have liquidity and capital in each territory of the union, which basically means if you're a bank, if you're a French bank having a branch in Italy, in Belgium, for example, you have to have your money Belgium and France twice, which means you think, what's the point of this banking union if I have to treat each market separate? So at the end, the single market is not really realized, and banks have find it increasingly hard to open in multiple jurisdictions.
But do you think it's complacency that that prevents us from finishing the project, or is it something intrinsically slightly more difficult?
Well, it's the usual difficulty in finding European compromises between risk reduction, which is what the Northerners want. They don't want to pick up any bill, and they're afraid that with so much risk in the system, they'll pick them up. And risk sharing, which is usually what the Southerners usually want, which is to make sure there's a system where we are together in it. And Northerners say, well, until you reduce the risk, we are not going to put a deposit insurance in place. And Southerners say, until there is some promise of real sharing, we don't want to do this risk reduction. So the whole package is stuck, and we all understand the package deal is the only solution. Mr. Scholz made what he thought, what many in Germany saw as a step forward when he put the dossier back on the table in November with his proposal. And the reaction, particularly by Italy, was very, very negative, violently negative. They thought it was the same old thing with a new clothes. And my proposal and what I'm presenting today at Bruegel is, okay, let's take serious the Scholz first step. Let's see what we can build forward from this first step. He talked about a safe portfolio without saying exactly what it meant. He talked about changes in liquidation resolution without saying exactly. I took a little bit that freedom to build on this and see if we can at least continue having the ball moving forward.
That's right.
Well, we'll talk today in the event in more detail about this. And I think one of the key worries and issues is, of course, about this home-host issue, so that the home and the host countries feel that they have different levels of responsibility, but perhaps also that some of them might lose out in this game. And so perhaps you can say a few words about this home-host issue. And of course, if you want to listen to this particular conversation in more detail, you can also go on Bruegel's YouTube channel, where we will put the today's event on the YouTube channel in more detail. But perhaps very, very quickly, I mean, what really is this home host issue, and how do you think it should be solved?
Yeah, if you're the Belgian authority and you're scared that if a French bank, to put an example, a potential example, a French banker.
Well, there was some history here, yes.
Yeah. Could be in trouble, and then all the liquidity and capital was going to be sent back to the main headquarters, so that the deposits in Belgium and all other potential liabilities would have to be picked up by the taxpayers. You would say, oh, no. We have to ring fence. We have to make sure that the Belgian part of this French bank has enough capital and enough liquidity here, and that it doesn't move it around. Mm-hmm. If you're the French regulator, you're thinking, hey, this bank is actually well capitalized. It has enough money. Why do you force it to have extra money in one of the jurisdictions? We are the same Europe. That doesn't make sense. So the two sides, the one that's hosting the bank and the one that is the home of the bank, are in very sharp conflict on this issue. And my view is that it's all about not trusting the resolution and insurance framework. If there was a true European resolution that was at the European level with the European Resolution Authority, and if there was a true deposit insurance system that was European, this issue would go away. And that's the proposal, that's the vision behind the proposal and many others like the ones people here have.
Well, I mean, I think we could go on about this specific point for a very long time, but we don't have that time in this podcast today. So let's talk for a few minutes about one of the other big topics that that is currently being discussed in Europe, in Brussels, around the world, which is really this very bold idea of Europe to become carbon neutral by 2050. I think many citizens really think that's the right thing to do, because climate change is there. It's for real. We all agree that climate change is perhaps one of the biggest challenges of our time. Yet the Commission proposals so far, at least some of them have been, I guess, somewhat disappointing. At least the financing package that Frans Timmermans proposed only a few weeks ago didn't look convincing, because essentially there's no money. I mean, so there's money out of nothing, generated out of nothing, makes economists usually suspicious that something doesn't add up. So what's your worry when you look at the Green Deal, the way the Green Deal is being structured?
I would say I was very happy when the Green Deal was put on the agenda by Commissioner von der Leyen, and I think that's a bold, fantastic vision for Europe. And I think the Parliament was really enthusiastic about this, and definitely Renew Europe believes, as you said, that climate is the big challenge of our times. The problem is indeed when you want to do things on the cheap, then you get unintended consequences. In this case, we have a very bold and ambitious agenda. We're going to force companies to comply with very demanding targets. But we're not going to give them any money to do the transition because we don't have it. So how are they going to do the transition? How are we going to make sure nobody's left behind? Well, the states are going to have to do it. Careful. We have state aid regime, which blocks the states from doing it. We have a very strong macroeconomic surveillance procedure, a set of procedures, complex set of procedures that wouldn't allow states with deficits to do these things. So the consequence of doing it without money is we're going to have enormous pressure to say, well, sorry, we'll have to waive the state aid rules for the Green Deal. Well, if you waive state aid rules, then you have countries like, for example, Germany, who have a very, very strong budgetary position, who will tell their car manufacturers, oh, don't worry, here's a checkbook, just make batteries, make electric cars, et cetera, et cetera. That will be greening, that will be transition. And they will potentially be able to outcompete countries which are financially in worse straits. Similarly, for the weakening of the imbalances procedures, if we decide, okay, Europe doesn't have the money, so states have to do it, and the states are going to say, well, then you have to eliminate these surveillance procedures and let us incur much larger deficits. And the problem right now is while we don't have a real economic and monetary union, while we don't have the possibility for states to go bankrupt on their own, let's say, to take care of their own loans, and we have this implicit cross-country guarantee from one state to the other, there is good reason for some states to be worried about the finances of the other states. These procedures exist for a reason. So I fear that eliminating state aids, even merger controls to have champions, this has also been talked, the context of the digital agenda makes this problem even larger because in the digital agenda, there's also talk of a state aid rule and weakening merger control rules. And you add one little bit of context, which is the British Living, who are the bigger guardians of competition, have been traditionally. And you do have, I think, a risk for our single market.
So let me see if I understand you correctly. So you believe that our climate ambitions are jeopardizing the architecture of what we have right now?
Well, no. Our climate ambitions are great and they shouldn't jeopardize anything. It's pursuing our climate ambitions with our European money. That's what's the risk. I mean, I think it's great that countries want to do this, and I am a strong believer in all of it. But then we have to take a real serious look at own resources for Europe. We have to take a real serious look at the ETS system, which is the jewel on the crown. We've really put a system that took some time to get going, but now it's working well. And we can extend this, emission trading scheme. Sorry for our listeners, all this jargon. We have a scheme that allows carbon trading and a number of emissions that is emission permits that is generated each year that allows for to reduce year by year the amount of emissions. And this scheme can potentially generate resources for Europe. I think the Parliament's position is if you want to do these things, you're going to have to do the budget. If you want to do the budget without, in this now complicated negotiation, increasing the contributions by the member states, there's only one thing left, which is, as Guy put it yesterday, Guy Verhofstadt in a tweet, tax big tech and big polluters.
So by the way, we're going to run back into the same problem of risk sharing, or problem disagreements, I should say, of risk sharing versus risk reduction, because that's what it can always boils down to, no?
Yeah, I mean, the North-South divide is very hard to breach. And I think, to me, this MFF round is going to be extremely, I mean, my prediction is that it's going to be very, very hard to accomplish a consensus that lets us pursue these ambitions.
But let's zoom in a bit on, I think these are very important point, and the risk to the single market is, of course, a significant risk if we go national and different countries have different scopes to do it. So let's just talk quickly through perhaps one which is very polarizing, one aspect of this, which is the fiscal rules. And of course, Commissioner Gentiloni, the Italian commissioner responsible for economic and financial affairs in Europe, has already made proposals to, some would say, weaken the fiscal framework by introducing more flexibility when investment is green, perhaps even giving some sort of a golden green rule. And the big fear by some in the north of Europe in particular, is that, you know, this will lead to nothing because basically the countries that have the money don't need this golden rule. They can anyway spend and do the green investments, especially Germany, while the countries that don't have the money will be more than happy to relabel stuff green and do it and in the end run basically fiscal sustainability risks at the expense and at the expense of monetary policy. So I hear from you that you almost endorse the criticism of some North European commentators here.
No, I see their worries and I see the need for balance. I think that the position of Renew and all this debate has been that we need both climate discipline and budgetary discipline, that we need to add a pillar of surveillance that makes sure that we are actually taking care of climate issues. But we do believe that ultimately, I'm the first person not to like the surveillance framework right now. As as Jeremy Settlemayer has argued, I think very persuasively, it's bad for the Southerners because they feel somebody's interfering with their pension policy. Mm. And it's the Northerners feel that they have a framework that is not actually being met. So both politically, it's kind of Jeremy Settlemayer, I should have said. So it's a framework that both on both sides creates a lot of political friction. Mm. Both feel that it's not working as intended. So we need simpler rules. We need rules that work better. We need rules that give the right levels of flexibility, and we need rules that allow for two countries to accomplish these investments. But we need rules. I mean, what I don't think anybody should put in question is that rules in a eurozone where we have a current currency, common currency, are needed. So I think in Renew we hold, as in many of these issues, we really hold a balance. You know, we have. If you want to put it this way, to put it in a simple way for our listeners, we have Rutte and Macron in the same group, right? So this is a parliamentary group that both arithmetically holds the balance of power in parliament. 96% of the votes we win. If you want to do a game when you see the parliament voting, just see what Malik Asmani, our vice president, is indicating with his finger, and you see whether the law is going to pass or not. Because basically, what we vote is what passes. We are in the center. But also, we hold also an interesting ideological balance because we actually have a centrist position that goes from center left to center right, and that actually requires a lot of negotiation inside the group.
But balances are a bit difficult if you live in polarized societies, right? I mean, so the balance is good if you can achieve something, but if it doesn't
it can be frustrating. I mean, this is the frustration of centrists all through the times, right? I've been a centrist all my life. I've been in a sympathizer, not active, in several failed centrist experiments in Spain in the 80s and other times. It's hard to be, we know the Lib Dems and the liberals in Germany suffering, and it's hard. But I think it's the right thing to understand that, you know, at the end of the day, centrist liberals believe that there are two halves here. You need a dynamic market economy to pay the bills for the welfare state, and you need a welfare state protecting our citizens to allow them to support the dynamic market economy. And those two things are inseparable, and that's how we are, I think, going to try to broke this deal.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we've got for today. I think we could go on for forever. Thank you so much, Luis Garicano, for joining us today.
Anytime you want me, I'll be happy to be around. Thank you very much.
Thank you.